Our gospel today is, I think, one of the most vivid parables that Jesus tells. It has strong images that are easy to picture. Perhaps you even had an image in your head as it was being read. And I wonder if that might be the reason that many artists through the centuries have depicted this story, why various musicians have set it to music. Back when I was in college, our choral group sang the Requiem by Gabriel Fauré. And we sang it first on campus in the recital hall, but then we took it on the road, as it was, and we went to the chapel at the Pomfret School in Pomfret, Connecticut. This chapel is a beautiful Gothic Revival building with dark stone, gorgeous stained glass windows, and in the west wall it has a beautiful rose window. We had a late afternoon rehearsal the day of the performance, and the sun was shining through this window, illuminating the chapel in vibrant colors. As we came to the near the end of the Requiem and sang the In Paradisum, I had an absolutely transcendent experience. The choir seemed to be singing with one voice. The beauty of the chapel transported me as we were bathed in those colors reflected from the window. And the text just came alive for me. The English translation of that Latin text is, "May the angels lead you into paradise. May the martyrs receive you at your arrival and lead you to the holy city Jerusalem. May choirs of angels receive you, and with Lazarus, once a poor man, may you have eternal rest." In that moment, as we sang that text, I felt I could glimpse eternity, maybe even look into heaven itself. I fully expected to see the heavenly host of angels and archangels surrounding the throne of God. I would not, frankly, have been surprised if I could have seen Lazarus resting in Abraham's arms. And in case you're wondering, the Lazarus of the In Paradisum that I reference is the same Lazarus we hear about in today's gospel. That Lazarus who once was poor and now is in heaven. Today's parable involves one of the greatest reversals of fortune. It is a theme that is echoed throughout Luke's gospel. Just as Mary proclaims in her Magnificat early in Luke's gospel, so happens in this parable. The rich are cast down, they are sent empty away, the lowly are lifted up, the hungry are filled. This parable is the story of two worlds that are very different and that are separated by a strong boundary. It is the story of two men. That rich man dressed in purple and linen, who eats scrumptious meals daily, who is rich enough to have a house surrounded by a wall with a gate. This man lacks no earthly comfort. And oddly, he is not given a name. We do not know who he is. The second man, however, is named, and he is called Lazarus. But he lives very differently from the rich man. He is so poor that he sits at the gate of the rich man's home and dreams just of the crumbs that fall from the rich man's table. Not having the best nutrition, Lazarus has some health issues. We hear of one. He has sores that the dogs come and lick. Somehow, the rich man never sees Lazarus. He walks past him without considering his great need. He shows him no compassion. In his world of satiation, of comfort, he is oblivious to the suffering of Lazarus right in front of him. Now, the parable does not say that The parable does not say that the rich man is wicked. It doesn't say that he treats Lazarus poorly by driving him away from the gate. He doesn't go about organizing his neighbors to remove the homeless people from the neighborhood. He simply seems oblivious and complacent, able to just walk by Lazarus with unseeing indifference, indifference to the great need of Lazarus. When the two men die, the rich man is buried and goes to Hades, that place where the dead are tormented. He is in agony in the flames of Hades. By contrast, Lazarus is not buried. Instead, the angels carry him to the bosom of Abraham. In that place, he is no longer hungry, but instead is comforted. Unlike when he was alive on earth, now Lazarus is seen, and he is valued. His name is known by Abraham, and he rests safely in Abraham's arms. The rich man is tormented by his plight and asks Abraham to send Lazarus with cool water. Even after the experience of death and the fire of Hades, the rich man still does not see Lazarus. Instead, he speaks of Lazarus in the third person and sees Lazarus as someone to serve him. He has not yet learned from his experience. Abraham has other ideas, however, and does not grant the rich man's request. He tells him that, in fact, there's a great chasm between those two worlds, and no one may cross. So the rich man says instead, maybe Abraham could send Lazarus to his brothers who are still living. Maybe if they are warned about the fate that awaits them, they will live differently. But Abraham refuses, saying they have Moses, they have the prophets, they need to listen to them. That should be sufficient. Besides, Abraham says, even if someone rises from the dead, the brothers will not believe. This parable, as I say, contains a rich and dramatic story that is easy to understand, yet one person who wrote in this passage said, it often falls on deaf ears. And it is, I think, a story that could potentially be frightening to those of us who are middle class. For while we are not rich by the standards of our nation, we are certainly richer than most of the world. Most of us live in comfortable homes and have enough food to eat, food of good quality. We live in relative comfort and do not worry about our basic needs being met. This parable is a call to all those who have enough, those who are comfortable, to shake off blindness and indifference. It is a warning that if we are not attentive, our comfortable life can dull our awareness of the suffering of others around us. We can be unseeing and uncaring. It leads me to wonder, who are the people that we encounter daily? The people who are suffering, the people who are in need or who might be hungry. Certainly I know from my own experience as I drive through the neighborhood, especially along North Main Street, I regularly see people asking for money at the various stoplights. Sometimes there's someone at every corner of every intersection. Some hold signs that say they are homeless and hungry. And, at the risk of sounding virtuous, there are times that I stop and offer them some money. But at the risk of sounding unvirtuous, there are other times when, if the light is green, I just keep going without looking. And there are times when I'm approaching the intersection, I actually hope that maybe that light won't turn and I won't have to stop. I can't help but wonder, when I do this, am I really any different than the unseeing rich man who ignores Lazarus at his gate? The reality is that God has given us many blessings. In fact, given us everything that we need to live an abundant life of loving service. Like the rich man, we have Moses, we have the call of the prophets. We have John the Baptist, who in Luke's gospel calls everyone to repent, to turn to a new direction, and if they have two coats, to give one coat to someone who has none. And we have Jesus, God who comes among us to lift us to the divine life. Jesus taught and ministered to those in need, loving everyone to the end. He was crucified, he was buried, and he was raised on the third day. And he gives us grace that we can die to a life focused on ourselves, on our own life and needs, and rise instead to a new life, a life of loving service of others. Jesus comes to move us from the blindness of our comfort, move us out of our complacency, so that we can serve everyone in his name. For Jesus tells us that when we care for a person who is suffering and in need, we minister to Jesus. In the Gospels, Jesus speaks most about money and wealth, not about other things. And he warns repeatedly that we cannot serve God and wealth. Wealth has a seductive power. It can take hold of our heart. It can leave little room for God. The pursuit of wealth can become all-encompassing and close down our hearts, leaving us unable to have compassion for others. It can blind our eyes so that we don't even see those who might be in front of us who are in need. And so God calls us to be good stewards of all the many gifts that God has entrusted to our care. God gives us time and talent, money, health, and relationships. We're given the bounty of creation, the fruits of the land, the air and the water, everything that all need to live. And when we fail to see others in need and to share with them from our bounty, we violate God's intention and hope for us. We do not live as God intends, as Jesus shows us how to live. And we deny ourselves the joy of sharing and giving to others. And the reality is that how we live has bearing on how others live and on the well-being of our planet. Our choices can actually afflict others and cause suffering. How the clothes that we buy are made and by whom matters. The way the animals that become our meat live and are slaughtered matter. The impact of our diets, our vehicles, our electronic devices have on the planet matters greatly. But the reality is the economic system within which we live, while affecting so many people throughout the world, instills in us a kind of blindness to their suffering. Their lives are far away. They are removed from us. We largely don't see them. We can be blind to the environmental impact our choices have. I was struck, and I mentioned this last week, by a recent statistic I read that says there are 63% of people in this nation who do believe that climate change is happening and needs to be addressed, but do not believe yet it is serious enough for personal sacrifices to be made. The ills of the world can feel overwhelming. They can feel so large that we can do nothing. But I think there are things we can do. Though we cannot perhaps help everyone who has need, we can help someone. We can do something worthwhile, something that makes a difference. Jesus tells this parable of the rich man and Lazarus to make clear God's call to us and God's will for us as his followers. Jesus wants to set us free from our blindness and our indifference. One of the commentaries that I consulted about today's parable suggested that we might find some wisdom in the words of a 19th century author and minister, Edward Everett Hale. They called his words a legacy of wisdom, and I share them with you. I am only one, but I am still one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Amen.